putting wires together here, trying different connections. Well, thank you, caller, for helping us out there. And I see we have about 5 minutes left. So I'm going to continue talking here. Anyone else wants to volunteer and put up with a little bit of noise so we can see how the phone lines work, you're welcome to call in 464-8295. It'd actually help out so we can work out some of these bugs here before the next show here. So again, 464-8295. So we're talking about this matter of truth and who do you believe and so forth. And it really has a lot to do with people's view of the war. If you believe Bush and the administration, then you tend to go along with the war. And so this is a great article from commondreams.org, which is another website I encourage people to go to, article called The Politics of Truth. And he talks about the importance of people understanding what a tremendous propaganda war that is being undergone here in this country. He says the Bush regime owes its existence to its ability to believe and its capacity to manipulate the news, filter information, and operate in secrecy. In a democracy, or republic, if you will, it is no easy task to turn reality upside down, but the ministers of truth have several important advantages. And he's talking about once you're in government, what are some of these advantages? Well, you have access to tremendous amounts of money through the Federal Reserve System, and you have many government offices that suddenly come in line to help you out. He says the second things that being used to manipulate the truth is, of course, the news media, which I just got through talking about pretty extensively here. And third, he talks about human nature, the idea that we really want to believe our government. And I say myself, I would really absolutely love to have a government that I believed in, that I trusted, that was really working in the best interests of the American people. But I do not feel that is the case right now. And it's just really a pretty sad state of affairs. And I think that caller was very accurate, who called from Monterey, talking about that we are right on the edge of reality here, whether we're going to go into more and more of a police state here in America or whether we can actually turn things around. And he seemed to be pretty discouraged about turning things around. And, you know, I'm the same as anyone else out there. Some days I feel optimistic and I think, you know, there's still a real chance. I know several people that really love this country, believe the ideas and ideals of this country, have become very discouraged. I know one fellow who's sold his everything and is in a motorhome now and is just traveling across the country. He just feels that things are too far gone, that the American people will never wake up in time. And he's really in a place where he could actually do a lot. And he says he's done it and just feels like he's hitting his head against the wall. Well, there's a lot of people feel like that, but, you know, I think no matter which way it turns out, you have to do the right thing. And so I encourage you, I've said it many, many times, keep sharing the information. Tell people about this radio station, as many as you can. Whatever information you have, share it with your friends and neighbors. Well, I'll be back next Monday evening at 7 o'clock on KFER 89.9. Thank you very much.
It'll take me weeks to adjust it, so we're going to get a new board here. I'm not going to bother trying to adjust it, because by the time I finish, we're going to switch to get another board in here, and then
yeah.
I'll start over again. So we're lucky we've got this much.
Yeah. property. Coming from the hills, overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news, behind the news, the story, behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's truly going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But let's go to our special guest this evening, Bill Sardi. Hi, Bill. How are you doing? Bill, are you there? Well, we seem to be having some problems. We had, hopefully we'll have Bill. Oh, we lost Bill. That's the reason we're not doing so well with him. The reason we couldn't get him is because he wasn't on the line. So we'll call him again and just see if we can get him back on the line and go from there. Anyway, under circumstances why we're going to be talking hopefully to our guest in just a very moment, but there's so many things going on today that if we don't have a guest, why, we'll talk about what you want to talk about. And maybe we could talk about Vietnam, because, you know, you really can't understand what's going on in America today unless you understand Vietnam. And, of course, if you go back, you know, somebody once said that, you know, the one thing we learn from history is that we never learn anything from history. All right. There's Bill. Bill, are you there? Well, I guess we'll hopefully, Bill, just hang on the line, and hopefully we'll have you here in just a moment. Bill, are you there? All right. Well, Bill, just hang on. We got through all right this afternoon. I don't know what's going on this evening because everything ran just beautifully this afternoon on the phone lines. So please be patient. Just hang on with us, and we'll be right back. But we're going to talk in just a moment here. Well, let's talk a little bit about Vietnam until such time as we can get something going. I'm going to just have to just... take a moment, and Bill, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, fine. Were you there a moment ago?
Yes, I'm getting...
Well, we seem to be having a lot of problems with Bill. Are you there now, Bill? Well, Bill is there, but we're just not getting him on the board. And anyway, Bill, just hang on. Why don't you just keep talking, and when your voice comes through, I will know you're there, Bill. All right, we're just going to play a little music for a moment or two here and see if we can get this thing straightened away. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I guess we're just going to have to hold off, and I'm going to have to just simply... Okay, fine. Well, we'll try Bill on line one. Bill, are you there? And, of course, Bill, are you there? Bill, are you there? Okay, well, Bill, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, fine. Well, hopefully we're going to be able to get you coming through here. Anyway, how are things down there in the Southern California this evening?
Well, they're wonderful. Of course, we're all troubled by the events over the week. Concerned about the future here. And of course, the big thing is, are we going to have the money to continue to fight a war when you captivate people and keep them by the TV sets all weekend instead of out shopping? That's America's number one pastime. And, of course, talking to various people in business and in industry today, they believe that over the weekend, sales in America were down by about 20%.
All right. Well, certainly the most important thing is the safety of our boys overseas.
Well, it certainly is, but we won't be able to continue to fight a war and support them. This is what caused us to back out of the war over a decade ago, because we became paralyzed and glued to television sets, and it just caused an economic downturn. We couldn't continue with the war, and I think Americans are generally not familiar with this. And of course, the safety of our troops over there, we are concerned. Remember that the numbers of troops, you would know this and know the exact numbers, that, of course, the numbers of enemy that that fell in Vietnam versus our own, the numbers were quite skewed to one side. Nevertheless, we were considered losing the war. So this is the same thing that's occurring now again.
Well, of course, the reason we lost the war in Vietnam is because our boys were never allowed to try to win the war. And what everybody has really forgotten, is the fact that the North Vietnamese were allowed to attack the South, but the South Vietnamese Army was never allowed to attack the North. Our pilots were restricted in what they could bomb. They were not allowed to, for instance, to fire on MiG planes sitting on the ground. They couldn't fire on anti-aircraft batteries, and thus they were fired on. They were never allowed to bomb the dikes. They could have flooded North Vietnam and ended the war overnight. They could have bombed the hydroelectric plants in the north and ended the war. They could have taken out the rail lines that were carrying the weapons to our enemies. They could have bombed the harbor in Haiphong. They could have mined the harbor in Haiphong. The war was never fought to win. I personally talked to the American ambassador to South Vietnam. His name was William H. Sullivan. I spent an hour or two with him at Columbia University back in 1980, and he said, I never understood why we didn't just win the war. I could have done it in 2 months if they'd just given me the go-ahead, and I'm not even a military man. Talked to General Lewis Walt, who commanded the Marines in the I Corps division. So basically, he said exactly the same thing. So, we never really tried to win the war in Vietnam.
Well,
the war was never really fought to win. There never was. We were never really fighting communism, because all during the Vietnam War, we financed the Soviets, who financed the North Vietnamese and gave them the technology and the equipment and the ammunition. North Vietnam wasn't manufacturing the ammunition. Where did they get it? Why, they got it from, of course, the Soviet Union. So, and we funded the Soviet Union, we and the Western European allies, to a tune of $40 billion to keep that war going, because it was fought to change America. It was never fought to defeat communism, and that's what we never told the boys we sent over there to fight and bleed and suffer and die.
Well, we have some of this same thing here again. News reports of one of the battles we've had in Iraq, where our army tanks were up against Iraqi, what you'd call SUVs, sport utility vehicles, with machine guns mounted on the top. It was kind of like some sort of a pea shooting game, because just one tank destroyed everything the Iraqis had. And this occurred 12 years ago, when there were statements or overstatements about the capability of the Iraqi military, how large it was, and so on. So I think some of this, again, is we're being misled on this. That doesn't mean there isn't any danger there, but it simply means that a lot of this was overstated 12 years ago. They admitted to that, and again, we're going to have some of this once again. So some of the mistakes on our side, of course, they show up. We've shot down a British plane. We've launched a couple of rockets that ended up in Kuwait, but we said they came from Iraq. They really were from our own side. I'm not sure that Iraq has even launched one aircraft. Donald Rumsfeld on Sunday morning television shows was asked, well, where are all the Iraqi airplanes? And they said, well, they've been kind of cunning, and they've moved them next to their mosques, so we can't blow them up. Of course, if they're next to a mosque, they can't take them off. There's no runway. So, I mean, it's kind of a nonsensical type of statement sometimes on our part. We need to, of course, support our troops. I'm a little concerned that they're being put at risk for what? I don't know what we accomplished by moving into Baghdad there. We seem to have lost. Our initial goal was to get the other side to give up, and, of course, for Hussein to either to blow him up or get him to flee the country. That didn't seem to actually have occurred. So now we're in for harder fighting, and that strategy didn't work. And there have been many people in a financial circle saying the United States and the world is in no position to fight a prolonged war there, and they're going to have to get it over rather quickly. So we'll see what a couple of weeks means in Iraq and what the American people think of it all.
Well, you know, it was really fascinating that as soon as the war started, the stock market just zoomed up almost 1,000 points. Now, why would it do that? I mean, what sort of psychology would cause people to rush in and begin buying stocks unless you understand that everything is illusion, and certainly we have people who are manipulating our stock market, and the American people are not supposed to know that. Suddenly, the stock market goes up and everybody feels good, I mean, especially if you invest in the stock market, and you have that illusion of having money, and it is all as they play games with our mind. This is the thing that really worries me. And, of course, in the process of playing games with our minds, they play games with the lives of our boys. Well, I think that the most important thing will be to win this war as quickly as possible and stop any further violence over there. My concern, of course, is that this is not simply a single war. This is a plan for multiple wars, and all you need to do is read the plan laid out back in 1997, 1998 by Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz. And have you read the Project for the New American Century documents?
You know, I haven't had a chance to read those yet.
I would suggest everybody out in the listening audience make it a point to go to the website. And
oh, I'm sorry. You know, I have seen those, and of course, that you're talking about the Bill Kristol.
The Bill Kristol.
Bill Kristol papers. I'm saying. Yes, and of course, they for anyone in your audience, they really need to go there and read this. The complete plan for world domination is outlined there. Without any prompting or terrorism, it was all planned before 9/11 and is right out there in the open as their playbook.
So let me, for our listeners who do not know what this says, it's basically the letters, first of all, a statement of principle by this group of 25 people, half of whom came from the Council on Foreign Relations. They signed the statement of principle in June of 1997, in which they said, you know, what we need to do is establish a new international order led by the United States that will, of course, be designed to protect our prosperity and promote our principles. And everybody said what our principles were. And then in 1998, they wrote a letter to the president. We said, we've got to take out Saddam Hussein. Didn't say anything about weapons of mass destruction. Didn't say anything about helping the terrorists. We've got to take out Saddam Hussein. And then in the year 2000, they put out a report called Rebuilding America's Defenses. It's all up there on their website at www.newamericancentury.org. And in that report, they said, we have to have American troops stationed all over the world, like the cavalry on the old frontier. And we're going to dominate the world, and we're going to really control what goes on, because we're the strongest nation in the world, and we're going to determine what's good for everybody. And we need a permanent troop present in the Middle East that will transcend the regime of Saddam Hussein. In other words, it doesn't really matter whether he's there or not. We're going to have troops in the Middle East, and this is what it's all about. We had to convince the American people that this had to do with weapons of mass destruction or helping Osama bin Laden, or they might sometime in the future give weapons to Osama bin Laden. They had to have an excuse for this. And then, of course, they've come up with all sorts of other excuses like, oh, well, we're really trying to help Israel, or we're really trying to protect the dollar. They put all these other phony excuses out there, but the real reason is laid out in their plan. They want a one-world order led by this small group of elitists who make up we call them PNAC, but they call themselves the Project for the New American Century. And it is essentially the Bush War Cabinet. Isn't that an amazing document?
Oh, yes, it's an amazing document. Here's the Agape Press Christian News Service today saying that Media Research Center, this is a watchdog group in Washington, D.C., is accusing ABC News of blatant crusade to criticize the Bush administration's Iraqi policy. And it says Peter Jennings is the primary culprit on ABC News, and he's accused the United States, Peter Jennings has, of being an arrogant power in the world. And, of course, well, we just told you. I mean, there is some arrogancy there, we have seen. And these documents, you need to examine them for yourself and see the names that are actually put on there. There's people high in the military and so on, and they're calling, of course, for the world domination by the United States of all the countries of the world, the placement of new types of military technology in order to dominate world markets and countries all over the world. And, of course, it looks like terrorism has been used as the vehicle or the cause in order to bring us into all these countries, station troops there, and incur all this cost. And of course, lives of our soldiers were going to be at risk for this just cause, as we might say it is. So the question is, are Americans really being informed what we're really up to, what the goals are? And apparently there's a lot of criticism that all this is for oil, a lot of this is for money, and maybe it is for that along the way, the booty taken along the way. We can see Halliburton and some of these other companies lining up for the reconstruction contracts in Iraq. Of course, Halliburton, previous CEO was Dick Cheney, our vice president. So there's all those connections there, but they're not the main game, as Dr. Monteith is pointing out. What they're really after is control of the world with one army, one religion, and of course this is what they want, one currency. And we need to be alert to this. This appears to be a step-by-step process, and it's outlined, it's bold, it's out there for you to read. All you need to do is go find it.
And is there their website, not our website, their website is www.newamericancentury.org. newamericancentury.org. You might want to get Dr. Davidson's law website. It'll help you to interpret what it says in the treatise on rebuilding America's defenses. That's austinuu.org. That's www.austin, for Austin, Texas, uu.org. Well, you know, Bill, I think if the American people understood that they're being manipulated, that the media is being used to inflame their passions, and of course, when you get into a war, why people feel very strongly. But really, what bothers me most is that most of the Christian leaders are solidly behind this war. Instead of saying, we certainly ought to evaluate what's going on, why the Christian leaders of this country, most of them, and the Christian publications and the Christian radio, is solidly behind the war. And anybody who doesn't go along with the war is equated with Martin Sheen and Barbara Streisand. And I don't necessarily like many of their policies, but I will say at least they have the courage to stand for something, the tragedy is I'm wondering what the Christian leaders of America are really standing for today, because they're pushing war, and don't they know this is just the prelude to other wars that will follow? All you have to do is listen to what William Crystal and the others say. This is simply the first in a series of wars to dominate the world.
Well, I had a discussion today on email with the National Religious Broadcasters, NRB, and of course Christine Pryor, their department head there in charge of communications. This is a Virginia organization that represents many of the Christian television, radio, and other programs. And of course, they wrote an email to me this morning suggesting that the war coverage is unfair. It's making our Christian president look bad, and that there was unfair reporting going on, and hence they wanted to become a conduit or a resource for good information about the war. And then they listed sources and websites that I could go to and visit, and I challenged them to say, I thought Christians were supposed to bring out both sides. We're involved in news media here, both sides of issues, and it seemed to be one-sided and pro-war. And the second question is what in the world did all of this have to do with what Jesus Christ asked Christians to do, which is to preach the gospel, feed the hungry, heal the sick, take care of the widows? And after that, I'd be so busy, I really wouldn't have much time do anything.
We're going to have to interrupt you there, Bill. We're going to have to go to a break here. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bill Sardi. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Bill Sardi. And Bill is a health journalist, but he's also, does a great deal of research and helps me about getting articles that really dramatize what's going on in the world today. And he's got a very, very good grasp of what's going on. So I asked him to come on now. I don't think that a Christian has to be a wimp. I think that a Christian can take a stand. And comes a time to fight when it's necessary. But if you analyze every war of the last century, every one of them was contrived. And those of you who don't believe in that need to get my video. It's entitled the little-known facts behind wars and revolutions of the 20th century, starting with the sinking of the Maine, which was a contrived to make it appear that the Spanish had sunk the Maine in the harbor at Havana and used to justify a war getting America involved in the First World War, which was a totally useless war, and 21 million people died, and another 30 to 40 people were injured. And then, of course, when that didn't bring about the New World Order, they had to get the Second World War going, and we could talk about that ad infinitum, how they created the Second World War and ready for months before the Second World War ended. The Germans tried repeatedly to surrender. The Japanese tried repeatedly to surrender. And if any of you would like a copy of the Chicago Tribune article, it was put out on the very day of the Japanese surrender. And they comment the Japanese have been trying to surrender for 6 months. And, of course, we wouldn't let them. And the invasion of Iwo Jima and Nagasaki and of American dropping of the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were totally unnecessary. We invaded Iwo Jima. We invaded Okinawa. And it wasn't necessary. The Japanese wanted to surrender, and we wouldn't let them. And how do you justify that unless there is truly evil in the world? But, of course, we had to use that Second World War to get the people of the world to go along with this idea of the United Nations. That's what it was all about. This was planned back in 1908. We actually have articles out of the Journal of American History in 1908 with the first draft of the United Nations Charter. They were planning on the United Nations even before the senseless First World War. So, I mean, you talk about Christians being willing to fight. Well, the battle is here at home. The battle is for the hearts and minds of the people. And what are the average Christian doing? Why are they supporting going to war? And whenever you fight a war, an awful lot of innocent people get killed. And there are things that are worth fighting for, but you better be very, very sure that your leadership is doing what's right rather than is pursuing this goal of a new world order and the new world religion, which is the goal of Satan himself.
Well, don't forget, we're being told it's WMD, weapons of mass destruction. Be assured the United States is going to find them. And we did have the announcement over the weekend that the troops, our U.S. troops, had captured a chemical plant in Iraq. It was over a 100-acre facility. The problem is they can't confirm that. General Franks today can't confirm that. They can't confirm it. They've been there now a day and a half. They can't confirm any of this. So we're looking for weapons of mass destruction. They assure us we're going to find them. That was the reason why we had to go and preempt and of course, attack Iraq now before they use them against us. So who knows? They certainly may find such weapons. There is a concern. Previous weapons inspectors there have been asked about this and have said, well, it's going to be a surprise if these are actually found there. That area where they did go into that camp, where there may be a weapons or a chemical weapons plant, is not an area of Iraq that's even friendly to Saddam Hussein. So there is some concern that that would even be anything under his jurisdiction and control would be highly suspect. Scott Ritter, the former UN weapons inspector, said if it's true, it would legitimize in one fell swoop the entire Bush administration position on Iraq. Of course, he said it comes up at a convenient time, and, of course, it still has to be confirmed. So we'll have to see whether that's really true. We do see here, if you'll just go to the White House's own website, which is just whitehouse.gov, you'll see an interview between Prime Minister Blair of England and President Bush and the news media, and you'll see questions there. And one pertinent question was one of the people there in the press asked one question for both of you. Do you believe there's any link between Saddam Hussein, a direct link, and the men who attacked the United States on September 11th? The president said, I can't make that claim. Tony Blair said, that answers your question. What kind of a non sequitur was that? What does he mean? That answers your question. It makes no sense. If that's true, if they can't make that claim, then why are they keep pushing? They have to have more legitimate reasons for war, and this is why we don't have the world behind us. This is why we have criticism. We're not making a good case for this. And you can argue, well, it's our side. We're right. They're wrong. Okay, But we have to, we're in a world court of opinion. We have to have good reasons, or we're not going to get the world to go along with us. And apparently, a good portion of the world isn't along on the boat with us in this war. So I feel we've done a real poor job of selling this idea to the rest of the world. And of course, the more we use phony information, this kind of thing, it makes us suspect, highly criticized, and we lose support. And as day by day goes on, I don't know how many Americans can continue to look the other way and accept this propaganda. It seems like our news media gives the appearance that there is some sort of opposition to the war. Certainly you can see it in the streets of various cities around the world. But if it ever got to a considerable objection to the war here in the United States, then we're concerned they're just going to call the terrorism code red, and that would mean you couldn't walk out on the street. There would be certain sanctions. If all of you are not familiar with what this code red alert would be for terrorism, you would stop all businesses, quarantine certain people, restrict transportation. You wouldn't really be able to leave your house. So they could stop all dissent to the war, and apparently they figured this out long before, and this is why they put this whole terrorism thing into place, so they could stop any kind of real objection to the war should it arise.
Well, the thing that's even more disconcerting to me is that these demonstrations are all staged. Now, there are many good people, I'm sure, that get involved in these the demonstrations. They're very sincere. They're very committed. But, of course, who puts up the money? Who coordinates these all across the world? So on exactly the same day, they're all demonstrating. And who gets the people all to these major centers? Well, first of all, you have to understand, if you go to the Answer website, I believe that's the title of it. One of them, they're all old-line communists and the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia and Bosnia, many of the areas of the world are South American communist parties. Communist parties are involved in this whole thing. But who has funded the communist parties for years? Well, the great tax-exempt foundations have usually helped to fund the communist movement here in the United States. That's been documented. And, of course, you have to understand that even today, the United States is pouring tremendous amounts of money into the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union is awash in money because, of course, they have plenty of oil now, and they're selling that oil throughout the world. And of course, they say, gee, we've got all these chemical weapons. We'd like to get rid of them. Why don't you give us some money so we can get rid of these weapons? And then the people in our Congress say, oh, yeah, we've got to get rid of those chemical weapons over there in Russia. So we give them, I don't know how many, $100 million to do that. And then they say, we've got these biological weapons. Gee, we need to get rid of those. And gee, we've got to do away with all these old nuclear missiles that we've got. Of course, they have to be dismantled anyway because they're not safe anymore. And so we give them money for that. We can always find a reason to give the Soviets money, and then of course the Soviets helped the Iraqis, and of course so much of the Iraqi military equipment that they've gotten in the intervening time has come from the Russians or from the Chinese communists, and of course the Chinese communists built up a system of underground fiber optic cables so that they didn't have to rely upon radio while they could use these fiber optic cables to communicate back and forth. That was done by the Chinese communists, our good friends, in violation of UN sanctions. But don't feel bad about that. Basically, we allowed Saddam to smuggle oil in violation of all the agreements into both Turkey and Jordan. And the United States did nothing about that. That's been going on ever since the sanctions were first put on. In other words, we've allowed them to do exactly what they were not supposed to do so they could get the money to buy the weapons for the coming war. Something's wrong with this whole scenario, and most people have no concept of what's really going on in the world today.
Well, there is...
We're going to have to go to a break.
Okay, fine.
Okay, there we are, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is Bill Sardi. Bill, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
we have to take those breaks from time to time. There's this question now of, on this side of the ocean, we don't seem to hear much about the Iraqis and how they're suffering, and many of them are. They're just innocent people. Hundreds of them are in hospitals, and we have this as record in many of the British papers. There's the Independent on March 23rd. Talking about hundreds of people, there's 101 patients in one hospital here, from the explosions and blasts that, of of course, have been there. They went through a little five-year-old girl here who lost all movement in her left leg due to one of these things, and the suffering of many other people. And we feel bad for all of these things. These were all innocent people caught in the middle of this whole thing. And of course, we don't hear about this. It'll sound bad on our part. Of course, Donald Rumsfeld and others saying they're trying to target these attacks as best as they can. But there is suffering on the other side, and we do have problems. The number two city in Iraq has lost its water supply. This is Basra. That's been blown up and destroyed. They're trying to get it back into operation. But can you imagine with thousands and hundreds of thousands of people and no adequate water supply, what kind of disease and suffering is going to result here? So there's going to be real problems here. We're taking on a country of, it's about the size of California, and it has about 22 to 25 million people estimated. And we basically got to supply them with food and rebuild their economy and everything. If you think immigrants coming into this country are an issue, think about taking on 22 million people all at one time, providing them food and rebuilding their country. And apparently what we're doing is going back and tapping the assets of the Iraqis. Apparently Iraq had a number of funds that were impounded 12 years ago when the previous war had started. And now there's a few billion dollars there, at least $1.74 billion, they're saying, and tied up in Swiss bank accounts and elsewhere. And the United States has asked for access to those funds now in order to use them for, quote, humanitarian purposes. Well, we're certainly going to need it because it's not near enough money, but at least it's some kind of money, because they're certainly going to need it to take care of these issues with the Iraqi people. Most of them now not fleeing the country, but staying at home, and so they're just waiting this out. And, of course, so there's not refugees on the move as there was in the last war. But there is concern now about their safety and, of course, where we see large cities without water supply and so on. You can expect terrible human suffering, disease, and so on to come. And if we're just fighting, of course, to maintain our way and militarily, I doubt if we're going to, with distractions of fighting a war, we'll be able to get to all these other issues of human suffering right away. So we certainly didn't in Afghanistan, where that was a lot smaller of an issue to deal with. So, you know, all of these things taken, money is going to be an issue in order to continue to fight a war, and, of course, to rebuild Iraq is going to be quite a challenge for the United States.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. I get the regular faxes from Gary Bauer. Now, Gary Bauer I've always liked, but he is a member of this PNAC. He was one of the original 25 members of PNAC, and he sends out these faxes every day to build support for the war. Let me read what he said today. Kenneth Johnson is a young American pastor who had deceived himself enough to go to Iraq as a human shield. He finally fled the country after talking to hundreds of Iraqis. He said that many Iraqis told me that they would commit suicide if American bombing didn't start. That's right, start, he added. Their tales of slow torture and killing made me ill. The trip shocked me back to reality. Let's hope the images of the last 48 hours are shaking more people back to the reality of the enemy we face. Well, you know, certainly Saddam Hussein is an evil and wicked man, but everybody has forgotten that we backed Saddam Hussein after he used chemical weapons on the Iranians in 1988. We actually gave him billions of dollars, $5 billion in agricultural credits in 1990. We allowed him to borrow another $5 billion from a bank in the South. We allowed him to get the chemical and biological weapons we're so concerned about, but he bought them right here in the United States. And any of our listeners would like to document on that, we have articles on that. We even carry a book called Against All Enemies, written in the mid-1990s, going into the background of how we supplied the chemical and biological weapons we're so concerned about today. And they keep saying, this wicked man has these chemical and biological weapons, but he bought them right here in the United States with the full knowledge and consent of our leaders. So there's something terribly, terribly hypocritical about so much of what's being said and so much of what's going on today. And then, of course, when Saddam Hussein tried to kill President Bush, we're told, in 1993, instead of going after Saddam to punish him, Bill Clinton lobbed cruise missiles into a couple of empty buildings in Baghdad, and didn't do anything at all. Now, if you doubt what I'm saying, there's a wonderful book called See No Evil by a man named Robert Baer, who was a senior CIA agent in Iraq in 1995, and he tells this whole story, how the military wanted to overthrow Saddam Hussein, and we wouldn't back them at all. In 1995, the military wanted to get rid of this corrupt man, and we wouldn't let them. I mean, many of the Iraqis, as he said, almost every Iraqi I've met believes the United States is keeping Saddam in power. This is 1995, and many of them believe that Saddam, or some of them believe Saddam, is on the CIA payroll. This was the image that the Iraqi people had about Saddam Hussein. Why would they think that America was keeping him in power? Because, of course, there was everybody over there believed that in 1993 there was an effort to overthrow Saddam, and we turned the names of the conspirators over to Saddam so we could kill them. In 1995, when Mr. Baer was there, the same thing happened. Those people, we refused to back the attempted military coup. Now, if he was so wicked, why did we refuse to do anything at that time? Or maybe things are not as tall as they appear to be. Well, we've got Mike calling in from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Well, things are are definitely not as they appear to be. I have a question, and it's a little bit complicated, but I'll make it quick. Speaking of rebuilding things after we bomb them, this has been the line we've been given for decades. After the First and Second World Wars, we had the word reparations. After the bombing, we went and rebuilt. After Vietnam, we heard about rebuilding. After through Kosovo and Afghanistan, even before the bombing began, I believe, for sure with Afghanistan, and I believe with Kosovo also, they were talking about rebuilding. And now with Iraq, rebuilding. My concern is that this is all by design. These are contrived wars, as you say, and the idea is that we don't like the way things are in a certain country, so we bomb it to however we see fit and then go rebuild it the way we want it to be. I believe that our country is not ruled from Washington, D.C. It's ruled from the Empire State and their capital, which is in Manhattan. Stan, you were opening the program this evening by saying if we don't understand the Vietnam War, we can't understand the Iraq War. And I wonder if you could go into some depth as to just what the Vietnam War was all about so we can understand this one.
All right, well, I'll take a moment, and let me just point out that the source of my information is an article in Foreign Affairs magazine, January of 1967, written by a man named McGeorge Bundy. Now, McGeorge Bundy is a member of Skull and Bones. He was very close to Henry Stimson. In fact, he wrote a book with Henry Stimson entitled On Watch. Stimson was the Secretary of Defense during the Second World War and conspired to bring America into that war, involved with the cover-up at Pearl Harbor, the fact that we knew the attack was coming. We did everything we could to promote it. So Stimson was there creating the Second World War, and his good friend, who he wrote a book with, McGeorge Bundy, was the National Security Advisor to both President Kennedy and President Johnson. He was the architect of the war in Vietnam. And writing in 1967 for the elite, for the people who really run the country, he said this. And he was talking about there are a lot of people saying it's either guns or butter. It's either, persistence in Vietnam or, trying to rebuild America, the great society, introduce socialism here. We can't do both. And here's what McGeorge Bundy said, and I'm paraphrasing it. It would be an act of folly for any true liberal to say we had make a choice between guns and butter, between persistence in Vietnam or full budgetary support for our programs here at home. For exactly the opposite is the case. The great new departures in health and education and welfare, and any liberal who believes in the great new departures in health, education, and welfare, who believes in rebuilding our cities and believes in the cause of true equality, should not strengthen the hands of our opponents by saying we ought to get out of Vietnam. For exactly the opposite is the case. The road forward at home is by persistence in Vietnam, and if we pull out of Vietnam, there'll be tremendous reaction to our domestic programs. And what he, in essence, was saying is we're going to push socialism in the United States. And, of course, if the people, you know, don't have Vietnam, they're going to realize what we're doing here. And so this is a diversion. The road forward at home is by persistence in Vietnam, and a pullout in Vietnam would lead to strong opposition to our programs here at home. And, it was during those years that the Supreme Court, the occult members of the Supreme Court, because at that time Supreme Court was under the control of the Masons. They took God and prayer out of our schools. They found during the Vietnam War, the Supreme Court found a woman had a right to abortion. They changed the immigration laws to begin to bring all the people from other cultures and other religions into America and convert us from a Christian to a multicultural society. They began to erode the Constitution and centralize all power in Washington, D.C. All of this was what Vietnam was about. And if we hadn't been watching our boys coming home in flag-draped coffins, the American people would have realized that. Bill, what's your take on what I just said?
Well, we certainly have a strange politics today. We certainly have the war party and the abortion party. One allows murder before birth. The other one allows it after. I mean, that's an overstatement and a simplification, but it's sitting there in front of us to deal with. I think your caller here said that things don't seem to be what they really are or aren't quite right. And I will alert your listeners to be careful of the visual images they see on television. Here I have one in front of me of Iraqi citizens, it says, on a border town near Kuwait in Iraq, where they're celebrating the start of the U.S.-led war. And, of course, what I see is a picture of eight people, five children, three adults. That's all I see is eight people. There's certainly no huge crowd here. Little children just wandering around, of course, following around as three adults look like they're celebrating. We don't know what. The picture doesn't tell us exactly what it was about or when this picture was shot, or it could have been weeks ago or whenever. So when we see things, we have to be careful exactly what the news reporters are telling us about. Here's another one of a man tearing down Saddam Hussein's picture. I can see it looks like an Arabic man. Looks like it is a picture of Saddam Hussein, and he is tearing at it. But what does that mean? We don't know when and where this was shot, and it can be propaganda at times. So we have to be careful of this. Our minds are being manipulated here for good reason they may feel, or we need to be careful that we aren't being twisted in some way. So the Bible for all Christians suggests that we be wise as serpents, and of course the Apostle Paul said to be wise in what we do, to be careful about these ungodly influences, and they may be used on both sides, and we need to be careful. I would like to think that Christians were above the fray, that they were here to offer a gospel of hope and salvation, to feed the hungry, heal the sick, and to continue doing that despite all the arguments for or against war, and I think that's our goal. The kingdom of God was more important for Jesus to preach than any issues about whether Rome was to be in charge of that country at the time or whatever. So we see the example there set by Jesus Christ himself. I think it's clear for us as well. And Jesus spent his time not fighting the Romans, but fighting starvation and sickness and so on. And, of course, leading people by example and by in other means to point them to the kingdom of God. And I think that's, of course, the call for Christians.
Okay. Mike, did you have any other questions?
One little thing.
Did I answer your question as to what Vietnam was all about?
I think pretty well. Although, you know, I've always wondered about the napalm that was used supposedly to burn away the jungles, to expose the enemy and make them unable to move around the way they like. But I've always had the suspicion that they were clearing the jungles for the supposedly Western or whoever, banana farmers or people who wanted the land cleared for their own fascist purposes.
Well, can't comment on that, but I can. Go ahead.
Let me just leave that one behind. These wars and international events have so many facets, and this is one lesser point, but I think important nonetheless. The Kosovo bombing began the day the congressional impeachment hearings on Clinton began. And the bombings ended the day that the impeachment hearings ended in the Senate. It's so interesting that this whole sequence of things with Iraq has begun during the time that Enron, the Enron events were beginning to bear on the White House.
Well, I really think that the what's happening here is a long-range plan. I think that they knew exactly what they were doing when they sent the letter to Bill Clinton in 1988, and that would be Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz and Donald Rumsfeld and Gary. And you can actually get the letter up there in my latest newsletter. I actually tell you who signed that letter, but you can get it off the internet at newamericancentury.org. And all of these people were intent back in 1998 on this war. So I think that that may have happened at the same time as Enron, but that's not the real person for it. Hey, we talk to you later. We got some other callers. Let's go to John in Post Falls, Idaho. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hello there. Pretty good. Gentlemen, I'm really kicking myself for not doing this sooner, and I was researching a letter to my congressman when war broke out Wednesday. So I finally did it, and I wrote him and a few others and both my senators. And I realize it's bad form to read stuff on the radio, so I'll summarize. The basic gist of what I said was it a cry foul for the lack of congressional leadership and their failure to follow the Constitution and bring an actual declaration of war to a vote. And I suggested that if they really want to support the troops, what they ought to do is just do that. And how did I put it? Oh yeah, follow President Bush's lead and share in the risks if they dare. Of course, between you and me, Stan and Bill, When do congressmen take political risks when they don't need to? And you know they're going to be clamoring in line to get any rewards of this war. That is, if there is any rewards of this war.
Well, we certainly all understand, if we give it serious thought, that the Constitution has been violated. We didn't get an attack on us now where we had to fight back immediately. We chose and picked this fight, which means it should have gone to Congress first, according to the Constitution, which means... Of course, we have no constitution. Whoever's in charge has set the precedents that they can just move ahead without any constraint. Remember, you were taught in school that there was a balance of powers in our country and that we were to do these things according to the Constitution. Also, we need to recognize there is no effective United Nations anymore. Now, I know I hear from a lot of people saying, good riddance of them, we didn't want them in the first place. Well, that may be true, but we must understand it is the World Court of Opinion, and if we lose it, there'll be consequences. So we just can't wander off in the world on our own. So we may buy off a lot of countries. We certainly have here in this Iraqi war because we promised a lot of people some money in the rebuilding process. This includes countries like India, Pakistan, Japan, Russia, and others. So this is how we do it. But certainly the World Court of Opinion, it counts, and we're going to pay a price.
Anything else you wanted to say, John?
I also told them what I thought of H.R. 104. You guys heard of that, didn't you? Thursday morning they passed that little resolution that said, oh, we support the troops, blah, 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 but no responsibility, of course.
Well,
did you hear
about
that?
No, I'm really
okay,
not a fan of
that. Okay, that has passed the House.
All right. So what does it say? We support the troops. Well, I think every American supports the troops. They're there. We want them to get the war over and come home. But war is a terrible, terrible thing, and people have forgotten that people get killed, and civilians get killed in wars, innocent people. Yes, Saddam Hussein is a terrible person, but why did we leave him in power after the first Gulf War? Why did we allow him to take his helicopter gunships out and machine gun and kill the people in the southern Iraq and in the Kurdistan up in the northern Iraq who had risen up when President George Herbert Walker Bush told them to rise up because we were going to take Saddam out? Why did we allow him to take the helicopters up there and kill tens of thousands of people? Because we controlled the air at that time. We didn't have to let him do that. And the thing was, oh, gee, we let him do it. We had no idea what he was going to do. Of course they knew what he was going to do. And after the first shot was fired, we could have stopped him. And we let him do it for days and days and days on end. That's why a lot of the people over there don't trust us. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks so much for calling, John.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, Bill, of course, these are terribly, terribly trying times that we're living in today. And I don't think the average individual, he's caught up in the emotion. He's manipulated by what he hears on television, what he sees certainly on television, what he hears on the radio. And it's so easy, if you control most of the media, to control what the people think. We saw how they rallied the people behind the Spanish-American War, and how they rallied the American people behind the First World War, and behind the Second World War, and behind Korea and Vietnam. But they were wars were fought for far different reasons than the people, the young men who went overseas, to bleed and die were ever told.
Well, absolutely. We need to be vigilant, make sure that the information we get is accurate and don't be misled.
Well, I think that, of course, is the message, and I hope every one of our listeners there will actually get hold of the website we've referred to. It's their website, not ours. It's called the New American Century. It's www.newamericansensory.org. And, of course, if you don't have access to that, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. We do have the material. It's prepared, and we can send it to you, but, of course, we'd have to ask you for a gift to cover that, because it's really rather extensive material. But you have to understand that everything is scripted. Everything that's happening, I believe, is scripted. Not only that, but I believe that behind this battle are spiritual forces. And I believe that God, throughout all history, has used wars to punish nations. And the question is he going to use this war to punish Iraq, or is he going to use this war to punish America? What are your thoughts on that, Bill?
Well, we certainly need to think of it. I think modern man doesn't think of it in terms of God punishing us in any way. And yet... certainly, this was the thought of the prophets and so on of the past, that God would punish, and we see it with all of the prophets, really, in the Bible. This was their mind bent. Of course, Americans are kind of thinking, different. These are just natural occurrences and so on, but we were a country founded upon God. We believe that there are consequences for good and bad in the world, and I have to ask myself, we certainly seem to have just been coaxed into a war, or certainly thinking that we're always the good guy, and we certainly may be the good guy, but that doesn't mean you can just move ahead carte blanche, and a lot of people are suffering in the world, many of them innocent Iraqi people. We need to be concerned about them as well. We'd certainly pray this war gets over with as soon as possible, and of course the loss of life on any side is minimized whatsoever. And, of course, for reasons of economy, George Bush and others have to get this war over soon. And so otherwise we can't continue to fight a war and to win, simply. It's that's why we left this area. We were this close to, of course, Baghdad 12 years ago. So we'll have to see.
Well, I think people have to really read the Old Testament and find out that, you know, God over and over again used the Assyrians and the Chaldeans and the Babylonians and the Egyptians to punish the children of Israel when they turned against him. And the children of Israel were a favored race. Well, I believe America was a favored nation, and I believe that at one time we were truly a Christian nation. But who would ever accuse us of being a Christian nation today? And I believe what's happened has happened because a church has failed in its message. And the message today is that God would never want to punish anybody in America. And you talk to the average American, the average Christian, he's going to say, nothing bad's ever going to happen to us. Why, we'll be raptured out of here. Or God would never do that. I mean, God is a God of love. Well, then, of course, the God that they are worshiping is not the God of the Old Testament. And it is the same God in the Old Testament and the New Testament. And the New Testament foreshadows, pardon me, the Old Testament foreshadows the New Testament. But throughout history, God has punished those nations that have turned against him, that have been richly rewarded, and then, of course, repudiated him. And America has repudiated God. Don't think for one minute it hasn't. And there's no outcry from the church over the decisions of our Supreme Court. Or there's not even a demand that we take Christian children out of government schools. Oh, no, we have to leave Christian children in the government schools so they can, of course, learn so much from the other children. Well, we can see how they're learning the drugs and the premarital sex. Certainly, you do not send a soldier into battle without adequate training. And yet we sell Christian children into government schools, and then we wonder why many of them become atheists. Well, Bill, they're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
These are trying times, and I think it's a good time for every American to think where his loyalty lies. And certainly I'd like to think that our loyalty first is with God, then our families. And we need to think about our country, and we need to think what it was founded upon, and are we really getting that same thing today? And I think we need to continue to ask lots of questions.
God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us, Bill. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, these are trying times, and our first concern has to be to bring our boys home, but we have to understand the spiritual implications of what this is all about. Will God use this war to punish America? Because, you know, if you read the plan that's laid out by the Project for the New American Century, this is to be the first in a series of wars to lead to American domination of the world. Well, nobody's ever been able to do that. Egypt was not able to do that. Ancient Babylon was not able to do that. Rome wasn't able to do that. And America is not going to be able to do that either. And, of course, when you lose the moral foundation of a society, eventually that society is destroyed. I mean, certainly this has been observed by philosophers down through the ages. And, of course, there truly is nothing new under the sun. Well, this is the time we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're really dependent upon you to help us so we can continue doing what we do 5 hours every day, reaching out across America, trying to get people to think. So if you believe in what we're doing, if you believe that these are times when people have to take a stand, we hope that many of you will decide right now to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and you can do that by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a copy of our newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one free of charge if you haven't had one before. And our February newsletter certainly begins to touch on the things we're talking about on the PNAC group, Project for a New American Century. We hope that you'll go to that website, but if you'd like, of course, to get a copy of our newsletter, give us a call. And then, of course, go to our website, which is www.radioliberty.com. Tell others about our website. You can listen to our programs there 3 hours a day live. You can listen to our programs archived any time of the day or night. And then, of course, you can pull down our newsletters there, and we ask you to copy those newsletters to get them to other people so that they can begin to understand what's going on and begin to challenge what they have been indoctrinated in school. And, of course, remember, I was indoctrinated in all of these false ideas when I was in college. I believe things that I look back on them and wonder how I could have been so dumb. But remember, when you're told it in school and everybody else believes it, it's so easy to believe it. But you have to realize that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king, and that's really what's going on in America today. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers. We ask you to pray for our boys going into battle and their families and for the civilians over there, and whether they be in Israel, whether they be in Iraq. And lastly, we ask you, of course, to pray for our ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Good evening, Dr. Stan, here at Radio Liberty. Coming here from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, well, right now we have with us on the line a very good friend, Karen Lee Bixman. Hi, Karen Lee.
Hi, Dr. Stan.
Let me just comment, if you'd like to call us, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY from out across America. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California, it's 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. But hold your calls, because we want to chat with Karen Lee a little bit. Now, Karen is the investigative reporter, and she had worked in mainline reporting for many years and finally got tired of it and went off on her own, and she became the investigative reporter and did broke some wonderful, wonderful stories, whether it be, oh, the Chocolate Mountain Gunnery Range, which was a payoff for certainly Dianne Feinstein's husband, some shenanigans there, talking about billions of dollars, or, you know, of course, remember, you don't spend, $50 million to get to be a United States Senator just because you want to serve the country. I mean, after all, you have to get a little bit of something back in return for your investment. But, of course, when you're able to end up with one of the richest gold mines in the world or, get that and sell it to somebody else, why, there is a little profit there. And of course, Dianne Feinstein's husband was tied into Costco, the Chinese shipping company. So you can always tell when she votes, of course, where her real interests are. They're always in what's best for the American people. And then, of course, the various bills having to do, legislation having to do with the emission controls here, and that was a great story. Smog check too, wasn't it?
Yes,
Okay, but of course, Karen Lee's come up with a new story. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, the latest story that I've done, Dr. Stan, is titled The Reemergence of the Third Reich. And what I've done in this issue is done a comparison with the situation during the Nazi reign in the 1930s in Germany and existing law and actually what is happening now in this country. And the similarities are quite eerie. I don't know if any of your listeners have ever read the book by William Schreier, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. He really goes into great degree in describing the issues, the climate of the takeover. As you know, he was a reporter who spent many years, and he saw and witnessed all of this firsthand. But as you know, we had the Reichstag fire in the 1930s. Which was done by the German government, and they blamed it on communists, but it was the foothold to come in and take away the rights and the liberties of the German people. Well, we have had our September 11th, and with one crash of a plane, the same thing has happened. We've had Patriot Act 1, we've had the initiation of Homeland Security, and now we have a Patriot Act 2 that is now on the table. And we are seeing every constitutional freedom and right that we ever had be ripped away. And it's just getting perpetually worse. People still think that they may have their freedoms and their rights, for example, for a free speech. But through the Patriot Act, we're seeing that eliminated. I give an example here in the newsletter of New Mexico attorney by the name of Andrew J. O'Connor, and he was arrested on the 13th of February in St. John's College Library. He was accused of making threatening remarks about the president, and he was talking politics in the library. Well, he was arrested, and he was taken down to the police station and grilled by Secret Service agents. We had another incident a couple months ago. Another attorney in Albany, New York, was in the mall with his son. He bought a T-shirt in the mall that said, "Give peace a chance," and he put that on, and him and his son were walking down the mall, and He was requested by security guards to take the shirt off. When he wouldn't, the police were called. He was taken down and booked and charged. Had he been prosecuted, he faced 5 years in prison. They tried to get him on a private trespassing charge. They said that the mall was private property, and if they requested him to take off the shirt, he had to do so. Well, there was so much protest over that particular incident. All the wire services picked up that the mall did, they did drop the case. But these are just a few examples of things that are happening to people who may say something against the president on an internet chat room or voice their opinion in public against the war or the president or anything that they feel unconstitutional. And right by right, we're just seeing all the rights, the Bill of Rights are gone, and the Constitution is gone. Things are happening at such a rapid pace. And in this case, I think people are focused on the war in Iraq right now. They don't realize that in this, quote, war on terrorism, we're losing all our freedoms at home.
Well, I think, you know, during the last hour, we talked about Vietnam, and I simply pointed out that the purpose of Vietnam was to distract us from what was happening in America. And while our boys were overseas fighting in the rice paddies of Asia, why, of course, here at home, they changed our constitutional system. They took God and prayer out of our schools. They really undercut the Constitution and allowed the centralization of all power in Washington, D.C., doing away with so many of the checks and balances, repealed the Immigration Act, found a woman had a right to abortion, which she had never had before, but suddenly these Supreme Court justices found that. But the thing is, people have a limited scope. They can only concentrate on one serious threat at a time, and they assumed the threat was over in Vietnam, not realizing that the entire Vietnam War was simply a diversion to distract people from what was going on here in America. And I simply can say that without fear of contradiction, because I'm in effect quoting what McGeorge Bundy, the major architect of that war, said in an article in the January issue of Foreign Affairs in 1967, where he said the road forward at home is by persistence in Vietnam, and if we were to pull out in Vietnam, that almost certainly be a strong reaction to our domestic policies. That's what it was all about, to transform America. And after all, there were 58,000 boys that lost their lives, and 1 million South Vietnamese, and 2 million North Vietnamese. But if you are an elitist, if you are one of these people who has a different agenda, doesn't believe in the God of the Bible, believes that man is going to bring the kingdom of heaven to earth, if you are a member of Skull and Bones and the Council on Foreign Relations, and simply one of the leaders from the intellectual elite like George Bundy, you'd see nothing wrong with using the war to pursue your own programs. And my fear is that they're going to do exactly the same thing today.
Well, that's exactly what's going on, Dr. Stan. And as of this past January, a federal appeals court ruled that President Bush has the authority to designate U.S. citizens as enemy combatants and to detain them if he feels that they're a threat to national security. Again, this is the same thing. The Nazis in 1933, the Enabling Act was passed, which really gave the German government, or Adolf Hitler, his dictatorial authority. And people need to realize that everything that was done by the Third Reich was legal because it was done under color of law. History is being repeated once again. Surely both the Patriot Acts, Homeland Security, all of this is being done under color of law. But, you know, these similarities are very, very eerie. In a recent article, which I have quoted in my newsletter, it was revealed that now in Washington there is a spy court that issues the warrants under the protection of the Patriot Act. But again, you know, this is the same thing that happened in Nazi Germany. One quote that I really want to read to your audience tonight. We've seen, again, very oblivious to the personal freedoms that are being taken away. Again, this is similar to what happened in Nazi Germany. Let me just read this quote again This was in 1934, in the early days of the Third Reich. Schreier writes, "The overwhelming majority of Germans did not seem to mind that their personal freedoms had been taken away. In the background, to be sure, there lurked the terror of the Gestapo and the fear of the concentration camp for those who got out of line, or who had been communist or socialist or too liberal or too pacifist or who were Jews. Yet the Nazi terror in the early years affected the lives of relatively few Germans, and a newly arrived observer was somewhat surprised to see that the people of this country did not seem to feel that they were being cowed and held down by an unscrupulous and brutal dictatorship. On the contrary, they supported it with genuine enthusiasm. Somehow it imbued them with a new hope and a new confidence and an astonishing faith in the future of their country. This is where we are right now, Dr. Stan. In 1934, Adolf Hitler delivered a memorandum to his cabinet, and he proposed that the brown shirt should be the foundation of a new people's army, and he was going to combine his forces of the SA and the SS and all the veterans groups into a single Ministry of Defense. Well, now we have Homeland Security, where we're going to be taking all our different agencies, the responsibility for border and coastline and transportation security, combining this all into one office, just as Hitler did. All facets right now of law enforcement, our National Guard and Border Patrol are all coming under Homeland Security. And we have now sheriffs, that I quote an article from North Carolina, that are being made federal marshals. The scariest thing that's going on right now is in our nation's airports. People are going through security checks, and anybody with a real eye can see what's happening at the nation's airports has absolutely nothing to do with fighting terrorism. We have had pocket knives and toenail clippers and the most bizarre things being taken from passengers. We've had the obscure. There was an 82-year-old woman who was strip-searched, a breastfeeding mother that was forced to drink her own bottled milk. Again, this is nothing to do with fighting terrorism. And if our government was actually concerned with fighting terrorism, our borders would be closed and things would be done a lot differently. But what this is all about, it really has a dual purpose. Number one, it's used to psychologically condition the public into submitting to the authority of the government. Number two, it has been done with the precise purpose of bankrupting the airlines. So the airlines will be a one-world airline, if you would like to call it that way, under government control. Now, the latest that's being used right now, Delta Airlines is testing a new system this month called CAPS-2. That's Computer-Assisted Passenger Pre-Screening System. And when people fly on Delta this month to be able to fly, existing databases are being checked and compiled, and a dossier is being put together on each prospective airline passenger. Now, they're checking bank records, credit reports, speeding tickets, anything. And then they will assign a threat level on each individual. Now, if this is successful, they're going to expand this to all airports in the country. And those who will be politically incorrect, like you and I, Dr. Stan, will be classified as a security threat, and we will not be able to fly. Well, let me just remind people. Over 60 years ago, the inhabitants of occupied Germany, they feared those jackbooted stormtroopers who guarded the checkpoints throughout the borders. They said that command, "Show me your papers," that used to strike fear in the hearts of people that had to hear those words. Well, obviously people have no record of history, or they haven't read it, because it's exactly what's happening today again, only this time it's happening at the nation's airports.
And, of course, what the average American has never heard is that the head of the wicked Gestapo, this most ruthless of all of the German organizations, a man named Heinrich Mueller was rewarded for his fine services by being allowed to come to America for the government job. And Heinrich Mueller, the Gestapo chief, lived out his days here. In fact, he died in Berkeley. He's died in, buried in the same cemetery as my grandmother. You know, but if this sort of thing actually happened, why doesn't every American know it? Why, very simply, because the same dark spirits and forces that dominated Hitler's Germany dominate this country and keep this information being made available through the mass media. We even have a book entitled Gestapo Chief, the story of Heinrich Mueller, the head of the Gestapo who was rewarded by being brought to America. And until people understand that nothing is as we appear to be, so many of the Nazi scientists who carried out the macabre experiments in the concentration camps of Germany were brought to America and under Operation Paperclip. Others were Gestapo people. The Nazis were allowed to go to South America where they formed their own organizations, and they were helped to get there by the OSS. If you want to document that, the book Medusa File, and I'm sure... You know, but you see, you have to understand nothing as it appears to be. You've got
No, we live in a fantasy world, Dr. Stan.
Like the Truman
Show. You're absolutely right. The media in this country has totally been taken over. The only way that you get real news anymore is through the alternative press, like you and I publish. There was a very interesting court ruling recently in February. The Second District Court of Appeals in Florida, there was a case that they reviewed. There was a reporter by the name of Jane Acree. She had worked for a Fox News station down in Florida, and while she was working on her piece, Fox News tried to get her to suppress the report and distort what she was working on, and she was fired because she wouldn't do that. Well, she took Fox to court. She won the case in a lower court, but the Federal Court of Appeals overruled that. And in essence, what they said, the ruling, was that a news organization that lies or distorts the truth is not breaking the law. So when people sit there and watch their nightly news, they think it's true. Well, they lie very well. So, you know, all the news producers across the country can sleep well at night knowing that what they do very, very well is perfectly legal. But the American people are constantly fed such a diet of propaganda that they have no idea that they're sitting there each evening literally being brainwashed. And again, I compare that to the propaganda that was put out by the Nazis in the Third Reich. William Schreier, again, even though he had access to foreign papers, he knew that he was living in a dictatorial environment, and yet even he commented on the fact that it was very, very difficult to live in that type of a scenario and not be affected by the propaganda. And he also realized that he would walk into a pub or a bar and he would hear someone praise Hitler or Goebbels or one of his henchmen. And when he would sit there and try to tell someone, you know, this is not the way it is, they would look at him, you know, like he was quite crazy. And he said he finally came to the realization that he said it was useless to try to make contact with a mind that had become warped. We are seeing the same thing today. If we try to go up to the normal person on the street and say that, you know, this is an unjust war, we don't belong in Iraq, or we try to explain the global position and the purpose for this war, those are the type of people that would probably pick up the telephone and call the FBI. So we are just seeing history being repeated all over again.
Like deja vu all over again.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, of course, if you're out there at the listening audience, you have a question or comment, give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. If you agree or disagree, that's what the talk radio is all about. And if you, but right now, let's get Karen Lee's telephone number out, and how can people get in touch with you and possibly get copies of the, you can't give the price, but to tell them about your publication and, of course, why they should want to get it. Other than the fact it's one of the best newsletters in the country.
Well, thank you very much. Well, the Investigative Reporter comes out once a month, and I guess I don't know if I'm cutting edge. I always like to say that I ride shotgun. I'm usually ahead of the pack, but I think they will read things in my publication that they won't read anywhere else. And if people are interested, they can call the office. I can give that number. That's 562-493-8957. 562-493-8957.
All right, fine. And it's an outstanding newsletter. I enjoy getting it. And, of course, I always read it through. Only about three or four newsletters I read regularly, and that certainly is one of them, because there's always something there that's important and worthwhile. Well, of course, what Karen Lee is doing is drawing this analogy between what happened in Hitler's Germany and what happened is happening in the United States. In Hitler's Germany, it was the wicked communists. Here it's the wicked terrorists. But people do not understand that if you go into the background of this terrorist movement, where did it come from? Why, the whole thing was funded by the CIA. It was created in the during the Afghan War. In fact, it was created after we, number one, overthrew the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollah to power in 1979. And it was that very same year, in July, we began financing the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Prior to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, we justified that because it was a pro-communist government. We wanted to harass it. And then, of course, once the Soviet invasion was undertaken, then we had a justification for massive aid and financial aid to recruit Muslims from throughout the world and bring them to Afghanistan and indoctrinate them in this radical Islamic fundamentalist belief. We even spent $56 million on textbooks in the mid-1990s to indoctrinate the children, the young boys in the schools in Afghanistan, in this radical form of Islam, you know, kill the infidels, die for Allah, go off to paradise. Why would we do something that stupid? Unintentionally. And maybe it wasn't unintentional. Maybe we knew exactly what we were doing. Were we creating the best enemy that money could buy? Certainly, we knew that they were operating here in America. We allowed them to come here to recruit terrorists, to raise the funds, all during the late 1980s and early 1990s, to set up their terrorist training camps here. And if you haven't seen Stephen Emerson's excellent video, Jihad in America, you need to. It was actively suppressed by somebody within our government. Why would they suppress a video here in America? Because they didn't want the American people to realize that even in the early 1990s, there were already terrorist training camps right here in the United States, and the funds were being raised in the United States for this Islamic training. Well, let's go to Nathan calling from Contra Costa. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
Listen, hi. Good evening. I believe that the information about the loss of our freedoms and the loss of the Bill of Rights is devastating. It's happening regardless of one's feelings about the war, regardless of one's beliefs about 9-1-1. It is happening, and this, I think we can all fully agree here. You know, there's only one way we're going to get out of this, though, and I never hear anybody talking about it. I never hear people in the Patriot press or left-wing press or any other press really talking about this. You know, if you read the Seventh Amendment, and really if you read the writings of George Mason and so many of our Patriot forefathers, you find out that they did not want Roman-style civil law as the government, as the governing legal principle of the United States. They wanted the common law. They wanted a modified version of Blackstone. We've gotten away from that, and that's how they're able to pull all of these stunts. That's how they're able to detain people indefinitely.
Okay, Nathan,
yes.
Excuse me, let me cut to the quick. What you're proposing, I understand where you're going with the civil law versus common law. Are you trying to propose that as a solution?
I'm saying that we have to get back to, obviously we're not fully under the common law of England, but we have to get back to the modified common law that we were founded on.
I understand where you're going with all of that, and I'll be perfectly frank. We are too far gone. At this point in time, we know what has been put down in the Patriot Act. We know all these unlawful acts that have been put in place. We know the Constitution is broken. And we know that the whole court system and everything that goes along with it is beyond corruption. And while I understand where you're going with the common law, with this whole frame of mind, because I know many people that are involved in this, I will tell you that at this point in time, the only solution for any of this is a spiritual solution.
I don't deny it, ma'am.
All right, this is a spiritual problem, and what we're seeing is a battle between good and evil. And in my mind, the only solution to this is when the American people wake up and realize that they need a relationship with the Lord, and they turn their life around and they turn from this evil. That's the only thing that's going to change this problem. That's my solution.
Well, ma'am, I don't dispute your solution, but what I'm saying is that practically and pragmatically, the way that I believe that's going to be mirrored in our legal system, at least to a greater extent than is now.
I guess what I'm trying to say, with this corrupt legal system, how do you ever think that it's going to get back to a common law?
Well, we need an education problem.
Go ahead, Nathan. You explain to us, how are we ever going to get there unless we change the hearts of men and have them willing to take a stand?
Well, I'm trying to get people to take a stand by saying, read the Seventh Amendment, read George Mason, read Anti-Federalist Papers.
We have people that have never even read the Constitution. They don't even read a book. They sit and vegetate in front of a television set. So how are you going to even propose that you're going to change the legal system to a common law system, again, if you don't change their heart first?
Well, sure. No, I understand what you're saying. It's the age-old debate between the spiritual, the changing of heart, and the spiritual path and the political solution. I don't think that there's a debate. They're in their separate spheres. We're talking about politics right now, and I'm saying that the political solution is, on the political level, is to educate people about what we've lost and what, as far as corruption in our courts, I mean, that's what we need to focus on, because the independent judiciary is laid out in Article 3 of the Constitution. It is.
I'm perfectly aware of all of that.
And it's a corporation of God's principles, the commandment of just courts.
You can't separate the spiritual from the political, because
Right, I understand that. And what I'm saying is that the commandment to have just courts is a spiritual principle.
All right.
It is itself a binding legal principle on all of humanity.
All right, I'm going to give you 1 minute to express your opinion, Nathan, and then we'll. In other words, I believe that the primary problem is spiritual, and until we can change the hearts of men, we're never going to be able to change anything about what's happened from the legal system. But I'm going to give you a minute to sort of express your thoughts there.
Well, sure, and I fully agree with that. But the commandment of just courts is a binding commandment of God, and we have to get back to it as much as is possible, to mirror His justice in the world as much as is possible. And I believe that if people would just research, if they would just read Blackstone's commentaries, they may be a little dense, but read the Anti-Federalist Papers as well as the Federalist Papers, to read the Constitution, particularly the Seventh Amendment. You know, it's all right there. The reason the Bill of Rights went through was not because the colonial elites were so generous. It's because the people, the lesser elites, demanded it. And we have to understand that unless we demand the sacred liberties that our American forefathers demanded, we're not going to get them. I mean, it's not going to be handed down. Yes, it's from God, but we have to be active agents.
But of course,
But
none of this is going to happen until we've changed the hearts of men so they're willing to take a stand.
But maybe the change comes through people doing it, and then as people practice it.
If you don't have a desire, you have no will to change.
Well, educate people. I mean, both of you have great influence, and you're talking about a lot of the right stuff, but you need, my suggestion is just to bring in a little bit of common law education and bring some of that perspective in to supplement what you're already doing, which is very good.
I fully
compliment you.
Thanks very much.
All right, thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Okay, fine. Well, I think Nathan's heart's in the right place, but I'll have to admit I agree with Karen Lee. We're involved in a spiritual battle, and unfortunately most people don't even recognize there's even a battle going on. And until the people return to God, why God will never again bless this nation.
Well, unfortunately, Dr. Stan, as I have written in my newsletter...
We're going to have to interrupt you because we've got to go to a break.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Yeah, okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Karen Lee Bixman, and I'm going to be quiet and let Karen Lee go ahead. And let me just put out a telephone number once again. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Karen Lee, go ahead.
Oh, all right. We don't have a break after all?
No, we had the break.
Oh, okay.
That was the music, right?
Okay. Now, when we're talking about the spiritual aspect of all of this, and we're talking about blindness, spiritual blindness, I believe that the biggest thing that's happening today is the spiritual blindness that is taking place within the so-called Christian church. I have been very, very upset the March 13th issue of Newsweek had an entire issue devoted about George Bush. And made this out to be the most godly president that has ever been in the White House. This man is not a Christian. You cannot be a member of a satanic society like Skull and Bones, take part in all these satanic rituals and so forth, and be a Christian. You cannot mix oil and water. But yet the entire Christian right is firmly behind this president. They're behind the war. And again, we're seeing the same thing happen now that happened in Germany in the 1930s. People think that Hitler was this deranged being, and they look at people like, oh, how could the Christian community have ever gone away or got caught up with that? But they need to realize that Adolf Hitler came on like a Christian. Let me quote him. He says, Article 24 of the Nazi Party program had demanded liberty for all religious denominations in the state so far as they are not a danger to the moral feelings of the German race. And he said the party stands for positive Christianity. He paid tribute to the Christian faith as essential elements for safeguarding the souls of the German people, promising to respect their rights. And he said that the government's ambition is a peaceful accord between church and state. Well, I'm not trying to say that George Bush is another incarnate of Adolf Hitler. But what I'm trying to say is the Christian community, the so-called Christian church, is in the same place today as it was in Nazi Germany in the 1930s. We had a situation in the 1930s. I mentioned one minister, by the name of Martin Niemöller. He was a World War I war hero, a U-boat captain, and actually he welcomed Hitler, as many of the Christian ministers of his day did. He really thought that Hitler would bring revival to the nation and there would be a new spirit of Germany. But what he found out is that rather than salvation through Jesus Christ, Hitler's salvation was through National Socialism and worshiping the Fuhrer. And once he realized that he had been had, he started speaking out against the Nazi doctrine. And, of course, he was apprehended and incarcerated. In 1938, he was tried and he was released. But on his way out of the courtroom, he was arrested by the Gestapo and sent to a concentration camp. And he remained there for 7 years until the camp was liberated by Allied forces. Now, there were many ministers who did resist, and they did lose their lives. But I just wanted to read one quote, Dr. Stan. I've carried this in my wallet. It's a newspaper clipping that I've carried for 20 years, and I believe that it sets the tone for what's happening today. This is by Pastor Martin Niemöller. He said, when the Nazis went after the Jews, I was not a Jew, so I did not react. When they persecuted the Catholics, I was not a Catholic, so I did not move. When they went after the workers, I was not a worker, so I did not stand up. When they went after the Protestant clergy, I moved, I reacted, I stood up, but by then it was too late. And so many courageous ministers did try to fight against the Nazi regime, but all too many compromised themselves, and every Sunday they sat there and they preached their sermons of one people, one Reich, one faith. And as the cremated ashes of Jewish women and children rained down past the halls of Buchenwald and Auschwitz, they gently landed on the bicycles of those attending church inside. And I'm afraid we have the same situation going on today. The majority of the Christian church is asleep. They believe that they have a Christian president in charge. They believe that this is a godly war that's taking place, and they're blinded to the global cabal that's in charge. They are blinded to the rape of our Constitution, and I believe that Christians or believers who do stand up to this one world order will probably be mowed down by these so-called Christians because they are so blinded.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's so much emotion out there today, and people have their preconceived notions, and they don't want to be, of course, confused with the facts. I think that the major thing that people have missed about Hitler and the Third Reich was the occult foundation. And of course, I think this is what we miss in everything today, unless we look at the spiritual. And of course, Nathan had called earlier, and he wanted to talk about something he feels very deeply about, and that is the common law. And if we could only get back to the common law and to the Constitution, everything would be fine. But this is not going to happen unless we address the spiritual implications. Adolf Hitler was deeply involved with the occult. He was a disciple of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. It's said that he read her secret doctrine on a nightly basis. The two volumes of it were next to his bedside, and he would write in the margins. And of course, if you don't understand who Helena Petrovna Blavatsky was, she was the founder of the Theosophical movement, an outgrowth of Masonry, the occult side of the Masonic movement that has such a stranglehold on nations all across the world today. And it's not just Masonry, it's Theosophy and Rosicrucianism, it's the New Age philosophy. And, of course, behind that, of course, are the dark spiritual forces that energize this whole thing. Now, those same secret societies are working at the highest levels of our government. Here in the United States, we have the Council on Foreign Relations. The Council on Foreign Relations is an outgrowth of a secret society Cecil Rhodes created in 1891. We have the Skull and Bones, which overlaps with the Council, and many of the Bonesmen become members of the Council on Foreign Relations, like George Bundy and certainly William Buckley and Stimson, Secretary of State Stimson during the Second World War. But the Council on Foreign Relations controls successive administrations, whether they be Democrat or Republican. And, of course, this is where Condoleezza Rice comes from, and Dick Cheney, and Colin Powell, and so many of the people in the Bush War Cabinet. Certainly the president himself is not a member of that. He comes from the Skull and Bones, and I would feel so much better if he'd just stand up and renounce the secret oaths he took, or say this was just a college fraternity, you know, there's nothing to it, and I certainly never met anything by those, but he never has, and I wonder why he's had the opportunity, and he refuses to renounce the satanic organization that he belonged to.
He said just the opposite, Dr. Stan. In the October-November 2002 issue of the Investigative Reporter, I did a whole issue on Skull and Bones and George Bush's involvement in there. The first thing that George Bush did after his inauguration, he had a party for all the Skull and Bones members. I have quotes from him as far as 2001. Where he talks about his membership in Skull and Bones and says that he is honored. Quite the opposite. He still believes highly in the Skull and Bones organization. He has done nothing to refute that. As president, to be a Christian president, he has two homosexuals in his cabinet. He has passed the stem cell research bill. A Christian is known by their fruits, and I'm sorry, but what we see in Washington is rotten. This is not the fruit of what we should see of a Christian. And what I wonder today is how many Martin Niemöllers exist today? How many Christians are going to be willing to stand up to this satanic globalist system? Instead, what's happening is we see the total seduction of the Christian church. And this same repulsive satanic spirit that we're talking about, We can see the stench in the school systems. It's corrupted every branch of government, the legislative, judicial, executive, the social services, all the city, state, and governments, the court systems. This satanic spirit is rotting away the walls of the Christian church, but nobody seems to smell the odor.
Well, our telephone number is 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Is there a conspiracy out there? Well, Congressman Ron Paul recently told a friend of mine that he had been at one of the committee hearings headed by Congressman Hyde, Henry Hyde, who is well thought of within the Christian community. He's one of the darlings of the Christian community because of his pro-life stance. And of course, Congressman Paul suggested that Congress should declare war if we were going to go to war. Now, he opposes the war in Iraq, but he wanted to try to, of course, get people to commit themselves on a declaration of war. And Congressman Henry Hyde said, you know, there at the committee meeting, this, of course, is not necessary. The Congress is outdated. It's no longer applicable to what's
going on.
Well,
the Constitution, you mean, is outdated.
The Constitution, I'm sorry. The Constitution is no longer applicable. And, of course, Tom Lantos from California, who, incidentally, is a CIA operative, according to the book we have, based upon the papers of Robert Crowley, who is in charge of the CIA covert operations unit. But Tom Lantos and Henry Hyde both agreed that the Constitution is no longer applicable. So after the meeting, of course, the hearings were filmed by C-SPAN, and they were recorded by the Congressional Office. Congressman Ron Paul went to C-SPAN to get a clip of that, and it had disappeared. They said, gee, we had electronic difficulty, and that we had everything but just that one segment. He went to the Congressional Recording Office, and they said, gee, we just had suddenly electrical problems, and we just didn't catch up. We got everything else in the hearings, but that part has just disappeared.
Yeah, they took it right out of erased it right from the Congressional record.
Right, and of course, this is what goes on in America today, ladies and gentlemen. That's how they control our reality. You know, these people probably realize the implications of what they said. They said what they really believed, and that is the Constitution they've sworn to uphold. They really don't believe in it at all. We've got John calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, how
are
you both doing?
Doing
hi,
fine.
John.
I still didn't write that phone number now for the newsletter. Can you give it one more time?
Sure. It's 562.
Okay.
493. 8957.
Okay, thanks. I want to ask the lady this question. Have you noticed that whenever they put one of these anti-terrorist acts in, the Patriot Act or Homeland Security Department, there's never a date given on when these things will be nullified in case terrorism is defeated?
Right.
In other words, there's never a goal that they'll say, well, if we defeat it, all these infringements on your freedoms will be retracted.
We have never seen a nullification of any law or act that has been passed. If you trace this all the way back into the 1930s, well, in fact, you know, when they talked about the income tax to pay for World War II, we've never seen that go away. It's just grown bigger and bigger. But everything that has ever been passed, no, it's not been nullified.
Well, it's Orwellian, and it's forever. I mean, it's
yes,
forever
right.
And Orwellian.
And it has nothing, it has nothing to do with Islamic terrorism. You read these articles, they never talk about Islamic terrorism. They change the definition of terrorism.
I maintain that we have, this is a very complicated issue, and it would take us much too long to go into the full-blown scenario on this, but we do have covert operators within our own government that are perpetrating a great majority of the terrorist events. I believe that there were covert operators, whether they be CIA or rogue operators, directly responsible to the global cabal that pulled off 9/11, and I think the next terrorist incidents that we will see, the same people will be responsible.
One more question. Do you think there was some kind of foreknowledge of the September 11th?
There certainly was, and again, we'd have to do a whole nother hour show.
Yeah.
I did a complete issue on that, all about 9/11, the foreknowledge, the phony information, and so forth. I am, so I can document that fully. And again, unfortunately, we are going to see more terrorist attacks done in this country. It will be blamed on Al-Qaeda or Iraq or so forth, but again, will be orchestrated by the global elite.
I want to thank you both so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye. Well, let's go to Eric, who's calling from Compton, California. Hi, how are you doing, Eric?
Fine, Doc. How do you do?
Doing fine.
Got a lot of Eric's calling here lately, huh?
What's that?
Got a lot of Eric's calling, I noticed.
Right, yeah. Right.
Okay, I got a lot of ground to cover. You know, a couple of calls ago, I told you how confusing this was all getting and how many Christian people were, like, so pro-Bush and so pro this war. And it's just starting to get even more confusing. You came up with a very good scenario, Doc, about how if, when bombs start going off in this country, if that happens, God forbid, how it could all be blamed on Christianity, and well, we could suffer dearly for that. I don't know if that's going to happen, but it's a very good scenario. It could possibly be. I just wonder how many times, you know, you can lie to a person, and then at what point do you say, well, this time he's telling the truth?
Goebbels, who was Hitler's henchman, he's the one that said if you tell a lie often enough, people will believe it.
Well, World War II, they would only let them take so much ground at a time. I love history because I love the Bible, and the Bible is a history book from God's perspective.
Right.
So I look at history, and World War II, they would only let us go so far. Korean War, it was one, I don't know the name of the parallel, but they couldn't go across some certain parallel.
The most important thing that people need to have today is discernment.
Right.
You have to learn how to read between the lines and realize that nothing is as it appears to be.
But you know what, ma'am? It's what you said to a couple of callers before. The guy was saying if people would just read, the minds are so gone.
That's right.
They're not going to do that. They are so gone, it's their work. It's like talking to a wall.
That's right.
Eric, but don't get discouraged. Just keep talking. But spend more time asking questions than telling them what you believe. Try to get them to think. Once people can begin to think, they may begin to challenge, but they've got to start to think first.
Dr. Stan, I don't know if you understand how difficult that is these days.
Well,
I'm not going to give up.
Let me propose a quick solution to you, Eric. My expression is, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. If you're trying to share information with them, you know, don't sit there and try to give them 20, you know, what it's taken you 20 years or even a year to learn. Talk to somebody. Ask questions. Everybody has a hot point. They're upset about something. Maybe it's a school system. Maybe it's this war. Find out what it is and then start asking them questions. And when that's their point of interest, then you can give them a little information. But then they're seeking out the information. You're not knocking them over the head with it.
Right.
You know, Eric, if you read the New Testament, you'll find out that so often when Jesus would be asked a question, he would ask a question in return. And if you stop and think and analyze what he did, this is how he taught. And it's a wonderful, wonderful means of beginning to reach people. So, and I know exactly how you feel because I've been doing this for 40 years. And, you know, I'm not going to, if you grab somebody by the coat lapels and try to shake them and try to get them to think, they're not going to think at all. They're going to repudiate you. Just use the low-key approach and just ask a few leading questions. Gee, I wonder what's going to happen to the economy. What would happen to this economy? What would happen to the pension funds of the average individual? You know, if we go into a hyperinflation and they're guaranteed a certain number of dollars, but those dollars don't mean anything. Could that happen here like it's happened in so many other countries? Now, of course, they're thinking about something that may impact upon them. Mm-hmm. Just stop and think how to approach this. And when you find a real good approach, let me know, okay?
I'm going to keep at it, Dr. Stan, but it's very frustrating. If I could, just real quick.
Right, go ahead.
My pastor yesterday, he was talking about the war again. He's a godly man. I love Pastor Gary. But he talked for 15, 20 minutes about how evil Saddam Hussein is and why this is a just war. Well, I know that the guy's a bad guy, but I feel making war against him is a different issue.
Well, again, Eric, unfortunately, most of the ministers are falling for the propaganda that's being preached. And they're one step right behind President Bush. And again, if there is anything that's needed within the so-called Christian community, it is discernment. I think key element to be a Christian is you must want to seek truth. And unfortunately, we have too many people in that capacity who say they're Christians, but then want to cover their eyes. They don't want to know anymore. It's an essential that we all seek after truth. And I mean, really, that's the basis of everything. You know, Jesus Christ said, I am the truth, the light, and the way. To be a Christian is to seek truth.
Absolutely.
And so I would love to see these Christian ministers actually seek that truth with all their heart and soul.
Eric, listen Wednesday evening to the program, because my minister is going to be here, Doug Vandermeulen. And his sermon this Sunday said, you know, it doesn't matter whether you are for the war or whether you're against the war. You have to understand that God is in this, and God is in everything that goes on today. And certainly God, throughout all history, has used wars to punish errant nations. And now, he didn't say what the errant nation was. Was it Iraq? Was it the United States? But, you know, you could interpret that any way you want to. And as far as I'm concerned, he was really talking about the punishment that's going to be brought on the United States.
Strong possibility, Dr. Stan.
And so listen to him Wednesday evening. And
I'll do that.
Be discussing this. He was going into Habakkuk. It was a magnificent sermon, because, of course, he wasn't trying to justify this on a political purpose. He feels that there's evil, you know, on every government. And I believe that is absolutely true. I believe there's evil, total evil, in the Iraqi government. But I believe there's evil working at the highest levels of our government as well. But behind everything going on is God's hand.
Dr. Stan,
right.
Ali North was on Focus on the Family today. I have the tape where Ali North was asked a question about the concentration camps, and he was interrupted by the...
Exactly, yeah.
Has Ali North made a true conversion, or is he still where he was?
No, again, I have to state that the majority of a lot of these Christian ministries have been compromised. Ali North is not a Christian in any way, shape, or form. I don't care what you say. Look at the person's fruits.
Straight out said he was.
You have to look at a person's fruits.
Right. I believe that.
Eric, thank you.
Yep. Dr. Stan, yep. I got my Phenopoly game today. Thank you so much.
God bless you.
Can't wait to get into it.
Okay.
Dr. Stan, do we have time for me to read a quote?
You go right ahead.
There was a British reporter by the name of Douglas Reed, who was in Germany, and this is his quote. He said, when Germany awoke, a man's home was no longer his castle. He could be seized by private individuals, could claim no protection from the police, could be indefinitely detained without preferment of charges, his property could be seized, his verbal and written communications overheard. He no longer had the right to foregather with his fellow countrymen, and his newspapers might no longer freely express their opinions. Dr. Stan, everything, the legislation that has been passed through Homeland Security and the Patriot Act, now make all these things illegal. The same situation that Douglas Reed talked about, we now, all those things can be prohibited in the United States according to existing legislation. And Americans always look back to a regime such as the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany, or they will look back and say, oh, you know, that was really horrible, it was terrible, but it can never happen here. This is America. Dr. Stan, it is happening here.
It sure is. Let's give Nathan one. Oh, I guess Nathan's going to talk to me after the show, and so we'll be glad to talk to him. And I share your concerns, Karen Lee, and I believe that America is at a crossroads now. I think that there is an opportunity if enough good people will just try to get the information, and as we've talked about in the first hour, you need to go to the enemy's website. And these people are the enemies of freedom, and I'm talking specifically about the Project for the New American Century. Many of our Christian leaders are part of it, and they've joined together with people like Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz and, you know, these people who are intent upon having America dominate the world. This whole idea that man is going to bring about utopia here in the world is, and I think, is a false hope. And, of course, I believe that we're in real, real trouble. I would ask you to go to their website, newamericancentury.org, read their plan, read about their letters, the Article Friday in the Wall Street Journal about this organization. You need to understand it. You need to get these articles. You need to say, look, this is only the first in a series of wars. Do you really want a series of wars? What will this do as far as our economy? When are they going to start drafting your sons and your daughters to serve in the military? Would you object to that? You may support the war. Do you want your son to die over there? Try to get them to think. Karen Lee, do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, bottom line, Dr. Stan, unless America repents, the reign of terror that's going to be visited on this land is going to be far beyond anything that the occupied people of the Third Reich ever saw. And the only saving grace is Jesus Christ.
Okay, God bless you. Well, I agree with you, everything you've said. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me on again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that, of course, is Karen Lee Bixman, the investigative reporter, and I do hope that you enjoyed our conversation with her. And then, of course, we certainly ask you to pray for America, because we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, and that's really what trouble is, that most people are not identifying the spiritual aspect. And Eric was telling us about his minister was telling us how terrible Saddam Hussein is. Well, no question, Saddam Hussein's a terrible guy, and the people who control Iran today are terrible people, and the people who control Saudi Arabia are terrible people. But remember, we've been supporting the Saudis for 50 years. We brought the regime, the Ayatollah Khomeini, to power in Iran in 1979 when we toppled the Shah, and we backed Saddam Hussein. So, I mean, what does this say about the American policies, whether they be Democrat or Republican? Because both policies, both parties follow exactly the same policy. Well, you have to understand we're engaged in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, an ideological and cultural battlefield. And I believe that God is in this war, and unless we look to him for the solution, we're not going to find it in the battlefield. Yes, we want to support our boys. We want to get this battle over as soon as we can, and we want to bring our boys home. And we want as little life as possible lost over there. And the important thing is that we get through the war. Don't get out in the streets with the demonstrators, because they're being manipulated in this whole scenario. And the last thing we want is for things to get out of hand, which would justify the imposition of martial law here. Actually, of course, the street demonstrators are giving more courage to the whoever's controlling Saudi Arabia now. Pardon me, who's ever controlling Iraq now. I don't know who's in charge. Is Saddam dead? Is this whole thing simply being staged in some ways that we don't even understand? Are there forces working behind the scenes in both our government and their government that are actually allied to create this? I don't know what's going on, but I do know that we're not getting the truth. So our plea to you is look to the spiritual aspect of this battle and understand the implications that God does punish nations and people who turn against him, and who would ever say that America is not turned against God. And on that thought, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers. We ask you certainly to seriously consider praying for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, we ask you to pray for our boys going into battle and for their families, for the civilians over there, as little loss of life as possible. Pray for our leaders and for our ministers. And, well, we'll be back with you tomorrow evening at the same time. Until then, may the Lord be with you.
doesn't help the boys over there. And the trouble is that our congressmen don't believe in the Constitution anymore. They're more interested in themselves and preserving their position of power. And we just have so few people who really care about the country. It's true, but nothing is as it should be.